Hello, everyone. This is Kate Stillman with YogaHealer.com, and I'm here with Dr. Claudia Welch of DrClaudiaWelch.com, and we're really excited. It's been a while. We take we have these conversations around Ayurveda and hormones and women's bodies and really progressive living, and then we take a little break, and then we come back, and it's just really nice to be back with some of the members from Healthier Hormones, and then new people who maybe are new to this conversation and new around here, to invite you into what we do and to see if it is a conversation that you really enjoy being in and feel a sense of connection and community around. So the way we like to start off these calls, because we know that life is full and that we all have a lot going on, is to just take a pause together and to do a moment of silence, a minute of meditation. And so that's what we'll do now. And I just invite you, if you're, you know, doing two things at the same time, to just take a breath and let go of the other things that you're doing and to allow yourself to come into this space with all of yourself, exactly as you are right now, and to feel into the container for the conversation. We have about 600 people registered for the call today, and to feel that there's a large desire for connection and enlightened conversation or enlightening connective dialogue. So allow yourself to simply take a moment, drop into the space with us. Thank you. It's great. It's really great to be back with you all, and great to be back with you, Dr. Claudia. I always look forward to this chance to talk and to connect.
I do too. I really do too. And welcome, everybody. And I want to say that, you know, even though there's 600 people or whatever registered for this call, it's so easy to hear a number like that and think, okay, I don't matter then, and I can do something else. And you certainly can do something else. I'm not saying you can't do something else, but it does matter. It matters that you're here, and it doesn't feel like this impersonal 600 people out there somewhere to me. And I don't know about you, Kate, but it doesn't feel like that to me. This feels intimate. This feels like one of the most intimate venues I have for expression in my professional world and in this community. And as I've mentioned so many times on my newsletter, and I mean it, it means a lot to me. It really means a lot to me, and it's special and it's unique. There's an intimacy in the community. I'm not a huge Facebook user, but the Facebook group here with this course it feels intimate, even though it is started by Mark Zuckerberg. I don't know what to say, how this feels intimate, but it does to me. And so I'm here with you, and you're here with me, and it's not 600 faceless people. It feels like a heart-to-heart conversation. So I just want to mention that, and I don't know if you feel that, Kate, but I think it's especially easy to feel faceless like you don't count when you think, oh, this is, I'm just one of, I don't matter. You matter. You matter to me. So that's why I just want to say that as an opening.
Well, I mean, we have the screen with your names and for some of you, your phone numbers, because we changed the way that people can sign up just with an email now, which I want to change back because I so enjoy seeing your names. And all the names that I see, or almost all the names that I see, I know from you know, from this community or from my yoga healer community. And it's that realness of we all have a voice that needs to be involved in a conversation like this, because one of the things that I know from, you know, the names and faces that I'm seeing on the screen is that chances are you're an influencer in your community and in your friend group, and the conversation that we have here will move through you and will stimulate the next level of conversation in your community, and vice versa. The conversation in your community will come back to us.
You know, one of the things, I'm kind of throwing caution to the wind these days when I'm talking, because I don't know, life is short, and what am I holding back for, right? But I'm just going to jump right in here, which is to say that these kind of conversations are important. And as a community, as a global community, as a community of people who are students of Ayurveda, whether you're students of Ayurveda officially or not, Ayurveda is the science of life. And anybody who's interested in how life works, from my point of view, is a student of Ayurveda. And so if we're students of life, we're interested in increasing the awareness, increasing the understanding, as you say sometimes, Kate, up-leveling, which I love, and I'm not quite sure what that means, but I think we all know what that means. And I think we're looking to do that. And I want to share something that might sound absolutely blasphemous. I'm going to share two things that might sound absolutely blasphemous right now. One,
oh, good, because I love the controversial.
Okay. One is, and Kate, you and I touched on this when we were talking before we started going public here, but we'll go back and fix this, but I'm just going to say it. Food is not the answer. Okay, there it is. Said it. Food is not the only answer. It's important, but I think as a community, there's a couple things we got to do. We got to understand food. We got to understand its importance in our lives and in the global picture of things. And the new thought for me lately is it's not the savior. I think that the world is so complicated and people's health is so complicated, and our emotions and the vectors of influence coming at us from all over the globe right now is so complicated. They're so complicated that we are desperate for a savior, and we're trying to make food that savior, and we're trying to make yoga postures that savior, and we're trying to make yoga philosophy that savior. And I think we got to be careful. As a community, I think we are getting into the minutiae of food to the point that we are creating neurosis, possibly, and possibly making the problem worse. And possibly creating problems for our kids. You know, this is all of us. It's not pointing fingers. It's all of us. It's certainly been me. There's an enormous amount of importance around food, but we've also got to understand that it's a means to an end. And when we get too picky and too little about it, we are missing something. We're missing something because we're focusing in on something little. And when we focus in on something little through the little toilet paper tube vision of our hopes, our hopes in this case being we really want this to save us and to save our patients and to save our families and to save the world, we are missing the bigger picture. And I don't even know how to describe what that bigger picture is. I certainly don't know the whole bigger picture, but I'm on a roll here. I'm going to just let myself do this for a minute. But there's this story that many of you who have worked with me have heard, and I'm just going to bring it back. It's in the Old Testament. Moses does something that God's pretty happy about, and God hangs out with Moses, and he says, all right, Moses, I'm really happy with you. I'm so happy with you, in fact, that I'm going to show you my backside. And I have a friend who, when he read this story in the Bible, he thought, what? What is this? Like, God's going to moon Moses? What is this? I'm going to show you my backside. And so my friend went to a friend of his who was a rabbi and said, what does this mean? And the rabbi has this beautiful perspective on this story. And he says, if God is showing, is happy with Moses, there's a couple things he could do. He could show him his face and Moses would be all happy. Here's God. And I just saw his face and that's really great. But another gift he can give him is showing him creation from his perspective or her perspective or its perspective, God's perspective, showing Moses his perspective, having him look in the same direction with the same point of view as God. If God's showing Moses his backside, what is he doing? He's allowing Moses to look over his shoulder and see the world the way he does. This is a big perspective, right? This is the perspective that maybe we get to in our better moments. Maybe we don't. Maybe we feel like we've glimpsed at times. It's this oneness. It's this connection. It's the up-leveling of the up-leveling with a capital U. It's really seeing the interconnectedness, really seeing the divinity of everything and seeing things the way the divine sees things, which is, as I understand it, love, right? So it's finding a way to live in love, right? It's seeing things through a loving perspective. And of course, this is the ideal, right? Of course, we don't all walk around doing this. But if we all walk around feeling like the perspective is that our Savior is food, I think we're going to be disappointed again and again and start thinking like, what's the matter with yoga? It doesn't work. What's the matter with Ayurveda? It doesn't work because I'm eating the right stuff theoretically and it's not working. And it may be not working because we are not relaxing. We are not seeing, we are not committed to trust. We are not committed to a more loving point of view. We are not committed to fun. We are not committed to compassion. And we are getting too little about food. And the last thing I'll say before I stop going on and on about this is I had this wonderful conversation with Durga Leela lately. And if you haven't heard of Durga Leela, she's a great person to know about. She's affiliated with the Shivananda Ashrams, and I think she works out of Grass Valley a lot. And she works with addictions a lot. And she also has a wonderful Irish brogue, makes everything more fun. But we were talking about addictions, and she was talking about how a great many people who are addicted to alcohol also have some history of an eating disorder. And we were talking about what an eating disorder is and talking about the general ones we have on our radar, anorexia and bulimia, but she suggested that there's a more insidious kind of food disorder going on right now that we are inflicting on our children, we're inflicting on ourselves, and we are contributing to our dialogue about food, which is getting really small about food, breaking it down into this is, the calcium and the protein and the, are you getting enough of this tiny thing or that tiny thing in your food, and telling our kids you have to eat this and you have to eat that, and also giving them a tremendous amount of power that they may not know what to do with around food. For example, we sit down at a dinner table and we're making one meal for one part of our family, and we ask a child who's 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7, what do they want for dinner? And Durga was telling me, we hand the kid a menu instead of make their decision for them. And kids don't have prefrontal cortex stuff going on yet. They aren't going to make a decision about food in any way other than emotional. And then they're being asked to make emotional decisions around food, and this becomes a pattern. Emotional eating, emotional decisions about food. She said, our job as parents is to be the prefrontal cortex for our kids. We make the decisions and we give them what we're feeling is right for them at that time. And so then it sets up a pattern for the child to have an emotional reaction and experience with food that may end up becoming a problem. So what we're doing with kids, I think, is just one aspect. It's one microcosm of what we're doing often as practitioners as well as students of Ayurveda, where we're focusing on the minutiae of food. Food is important, but we got to be careful not to overdo it. All right, so Kate, take it away.
Yeah. No, it's like, it's the whole thing about, you know, if we're becoming specialists before we're generalists, we're heading into some really dangerous territory where we can become so specific that we've lost the why. We've lost our bigger why, and we've lost the connectivity that we're actually looking for. And there's so much information, and there's so much amazing detail as we become more and more sensitive, as we become more and more conscious, we can become more and more specific. And that's an endless path, and we have to get that. That's an endless arrow of the trajectory. And if we're not pulsing back to the other side of the arrow, into more connectivity, into a bigger picture, I love the God's backside, that whole sense of how God sees creation. If we're not pulling back into the biggest possible, most cosmocentric perspective that we can, in which the moment is arising, then we're actually, unfortunately, going to suffer. We're going to suffer.
Yeah.
There's going to be more disconnect. You know, there's going to be more of an experience of separation. There's going to be more of an experience of I'm afraid. And I just want to speak to that, you know, when I heard you talking, I'm like, there really is like the fear diet and the connection diet. It's like, how are we orienting? If we're orienting from the fear diet, it's like, I'm afraid of that and the effect that that's going to have on my physiology. Am I going to react to that? Because I'm so sensitive now that now the nourishment has become, it's in some ways, it's like, it's something I got to watch out for. I've got to be on alert for it. And to me, like, yeah, there's a truth to that, and I understand it, and I understand, but I think it's a faith. And my sense is what we really want to be looking for is more, how can we understand our sensitivity? How can we understand our constitution? How can we understand, like you've talked a lot in the Healthier Hormones course about Kavaigunya, how can we understand our personal health history and our weak spots? But then how can we plug in to the larger perspective? So going from constitutional diet to seasonal diet to local diet to ecological connectivity diet to connection economy to global economy, like how do we start to orient from a bigger picture and yet have enough room to experience what we're experiencing, gather information? And one thing that I have found personally on this path with Ayurveda is that the more awake I become, the more connected to my ecosystem, the more diverse my diet in terms of I learn a lot more species each year in my ecosystem. I'm eating from my ecosystem, whether I'm on a mountain bike ride or on a hike or whatever. I'm just like, oh, I need to chew on a horsetail right now, or oh, I need a little dandelion or a little sweet Sicily, or like right now I'm going crazy over the Oregon grapefruit all over. And I feel connected to my ecosystem. I mean, my body knows these patches. So when I'm mountain biking down a trail, like my body will pull over because it remembers that patch from the year before. And I experience so much abundance and so much connection and so much desire to protect and co-create with these plants that I'm not afraid of my ecosystem. I'm not allergic to my ecosystem. I'm just living in connection, and now I can protect my ecosystem that's feeding me. I can experience the massive abundance that's part of a connection economy, part of even an internal connection economy, and that is really what we're, that's really, to me, it's like, that's what Ayurveda is all about. It's not about, I'm pitta, I can't eat a carrot.
Right. Yeah. We got to remember, you know, and this is something that we talk about in the course a lot, but this relates to what we do and what we eat too, which is that thought creates biology. So if we are tight about our thinking about food and our relationship with food, it sets up a dynamic in, you know, when we think about something, it creates a dynamic in our pranamaya kosha and the energy body, and that trickles down into the anamaya kosha, the physical body. We talk about that more in the course, but our thought creates our biology. So there are times when we become highly sensitive to something for other reasons, but one of the reasons we become highly sensitive to things is because we become highly sensitive to things, right? We become very, very ultra sensitive and and by sensitive, I guess what I mean here is afraid. We become afraid, like you were saying, of our environment and our food. And I feel bad. And is this making me feel bad? Or is that making me feel bad? Or is this other thing making me feel bad? And we're really trying to nail it on food. It may not be the problem with the food. Do the best we can to not, don't think about it, but it's don't think about it all day. Don't think about it even half your day, not even 3 hours a day. If we're having real problems with our digestion and our Agni and allergies and food and what to eat and what not to eat, give it a time limit maybe in a day. Okay, I'll think about this for 15 minutes today and that's it. I'm not thinking about it after that. I'll do the best I can. If I digest it, great. If I don't digest it, Om Namah Shivaya. And, you know, move on. So we've just got to remember that getting uptight about this is not going to help anything. You know, one thing I think we talk about in the course is how, you know, you can get all the best Ayurvedic physicians and all the best cooks and everybody on board in terms of, and they're all focused on you and what you should eat and how you should eat it, and they get that all together and they cook your food for you from your backyard organic garden, and you still can't digest it. Why? Because of anxiety. When we're anxious, cortisol leaves, you know, cortisol increases, our stress hormones increase, and they really shunt the prana from the digestive organs and other vital organs to the biceps and the quads so that we can fight or flight. So we start living in our extremities. We start living literally in fear. Cortisol comes up. Our prana, our resources go to the extremities. We can't digest anything. So that, you know, that's just on one level. But on a bigger level, if that's not the answer, what is the answer? And again, we've got all these complicated factors coming towards us. You know, whether we are trying to eat local or not, most of us are eating food from all over the planet on a regular basis. Most of us are wearing clothes made and produced from all over the planet. Most of us are exposed to ideas from all over the planet. If there's just too many complicated things coming at us, complicated vectors of influence, to be able to antidote each one of those. You know, if Ayurveda is generally an allopathic system, which is to say we treat with opposites, which we do, then our tendency in Ayurvedic thinking is to want to counteract all of these vectors with a balancing counterpoint. So if something hot's coming at us, we respond with giving ourselves something cool. If something's too heavy, we respond with something too light. But we have so many vectors and influences coming at us that we can't logically work this all out with food, right? What we can do, what I do believe we have, is this incredible, let us call it the supercomputer of the body, spirit, mind conglomeration, which does make sense of things and comes up with a response in every given moment to every situation, whether it's should I eat this food or not, to how do I respond in this relationship I'm in this moment, in this relationship, in this conversation. What is authentic? What is going to come out of my mouth or go into my mouth? What is authentic? And how we access that is really practicing going inside and increasing awareness. And, you know, this is a story that I tell a lot and comes up for me a lot, which is years ago working with a beginning Ayurveda class, and it was just, I was just a visiting instructor at a school, and we were talking about the different energetics of food, and somebody said, one of the students said, oh, you know, I don't know if I like Ayurveda. You have to analyze every little thing. And I don't remember what I said to her, but I got in my car and drove away and thought, oh, my God, she's right. We're analyzing every little thing. It's just sucking the spontaneity out of life. And then I heard, for lack of a better way to put this, a little voice just saying awareness. And what I got was, it's not analyzing every little thing. It's choosing to live life with awareness or not. Choosing to live life, being aware of how things respond and react and work in my body. Does it increase harmony or decrease it? And and to work accordingly. So really developing awareness of not just how food affects me, but how my thoughts are affecting me, how my outlook is affecting me, how my biology is being affected by my mental discipline and enjoyment, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Because the more we're, I mean, that's it. To me, it's like that pulsation between the sensitivity and then the biggest possible perspective, and the sensitivity and the biggest possible perspective. And with that, what I experience is there is a sense of like, oh, this is how it all works together at really another level of interconnectivity. And then I experience more. I mean, to me, it's a very powerful stance. I want to talk a little bit about the trust factor, that in many ways a lot of us were raised in a culture of, father knows best, follow your doctor's orders. You know, we're raised almost in a culture that didn't encourage us to trust our inner sensitivity.
Yeah.
And so as we're navigating this, it's like, wow, I mean, I know this with, like all the courses I teach people, gain this sense of like, I can hear inside. And I know when I'm violating that which has already informed me that it needs, you know, that like my body wants more of this. My body, you know, and healthier hormones. What I would say, we'd love to hear from some members too. So if anyone's in healthier hormones who wants to like pipe up and share some of their big shifts, that would be fun for all of us to then take that a little bit deeper. But what I hear so resounding in our community is the sense of like, I need more rest. I want to, and I want to say personally, since we started this group two years ago, like I listened to that so much more deeply now. Like, oh, I'm tired. I'm not going to push through it. I'm going to surrender. And it's that trust of really knowing what's at stake, knowing that this is the only way my body can communicate its needs. And as I zoom out from that sensitivity, it's like, okay, yeah, if I get the rest I need, if my daughter witnesses that, she learns that pattern, it repeats itself, and this sense of honoring and trusting and then being super curious about and what else really works. That's where, if we go down that path, I think we do start to experience a lot more of our own authentic power, that there's really, to me, we become a powerful container of consciousness, and an interconnected container of consciousness. And that's when, what I notice is the more I step into that, the more other people get a hit through me. It's funny, mm-hmm. Winston and I don't like to have too many house guests because we have our own thing going on. We have like really simple lives. But occasionally we have house guests. We recently had some house guests. And what I notice is that people leave our house healthier than when they come in, right? Because there's such a pull from that living in our own authentic power, like living in sync with what's good for ourselves, that people leave and they're eating better, they're really more curious about their own life and waking up to their own life on the next level. They're less interested in concealing or those subtle addictions. Sometimes they're not that subtle addictions, but just like the addictions that their body has that really aren't serving them, or that their mind has that aren't serving them. And it's like there's been a shift, and I'm not trying to shift any of my house guests, believe you me, right? It's just, we're just being ourselves. And that's what I really notice is as we trust in ourselves and trust in some of these bigger patterns, bigger perspectives, is that's actually a metric as how much are other people actually just kind of shifting. It doesn't have to be massive, even just like these little 5-degree shifts for the positive towards more connectivity, just from being in the same field as me.
Yeah, yeah. All right, I got a few things here. Well, one is just you asked people if there's people who have been in this course for a while, and you have anything you want to share about your experience, we really really invite you to speak up in this conversation. And how do people raise their hand in this conversation, Kate?
You press one, and then we'll see who you are, and we'll unmute you.
Okay.
So if you're on Skype, you have to open your keypad to press 1. If you're on the phone, just use your phone pad. Yeah. And we have Catherine who has pressed 1.
So somebody's already raised their hand, and I want to get to that, but in a minute, because I want to just say a couple of things. And here I am saying we're focusing on foods too much, and now I'm talking about food a lot, but I want to say one more thing about food and then back out of that into a bigger picture. One is, if you don't know where to start, whole foods. If you're eating whole foods, whole grains, whole beans, whole in a way that you can digest, whole vegetables, whole fruits in a way that you can digest, you don't have to worry too much about, is this a vata pitta or a kapha of vegetable or fruit? Really, you don't. Unless it's jalapenos or something with an extreme taste. Stay away from the extremes and you'll be okay, unless there's some intense thing going on with you, in which case you might need to get more specific. But in general, a good starting place is whole foods, often freshly cooked, right? Then you can work with someone to see after a while of doing that if you need to get more specific. But then, okay, if we're not focusing on foods, what do we focus on? Do we focus on yoga? No. The same thing. So many, we're all looking for the savior in food or in yoga or in some technique or something like that. Yoga isn't the savior either. They're all really helpful. Oh, my word. I am so grateful for all of these components. But let's back up. Let's back up. It's not that one yoga tradition is good and all the other ones are bad and mine is good and yours is bad and my technique is perfect and yours isn't. We all have to just self-refer and see what is working for us. And generally, you know, people say, well, should there be a healing crisis? Should I be feeling bad? No, in general, unless you're going through pancha karma or something, in general, when you follow these things, you should feel better. There shouldn't be a healing crisis. You should feel better in general. So we want to really self-refer. We want to see, what do I need here? What's right for me now? If you're not sure how to do that, I really think we do. I think we do. But there's a couple of little tricks, if you will. I think taking some time, relaxing the whole body, breathing, doing, you know, some of the breathing stuff we talk about in the Healthier Hormones course, that sets the stage nicely. But really, you know, closing the external senses and opening and turning on the internal ones. And one little trick is kind of, along with seeing inside, what they call Naquan in Taoism, along with trying to scan inside and see what's going on inside, also trying to hear what's going on inside and trying to feel, and even, weirdly, smell and taste what's going on inside. And just the effort at trying to taste, say, the liver, right, what's going on inside our bodies, just that effort wakes up this inner sensory apparatus that I think can start to enliven, start to awaken and be more aware of what's going on in there. So that's one thing. Two other things. One is, so if we're backing out, really looking at in our environments a little more is one thing we can look at, along with just our own internal environment. Our external environment, is it really cluttered? If it's really cluttered, maybe that's indicative of something, or maybe that's fine. Maybe that feels secure, you know, to us, to an individual. But is it promoting what we want? Is it promoting peace? Is it promoting harmony? And if you read my most recent newsletter, I was just in Hong Kong and teaching with Dr. Sabota, and I were co-teaching over there. And we went around, saw some of the sites, and one of the things that really struck us both is how pleasant many of the sites, the tourist sites, or even the quote-unquote spiritual sites, and I say quote-unquote because there may not have been any actual spiritual practitioner in some of these places that we were in, but they felt really good. And I think it was the employing of feng shui, employing an awareness of the environment and how to make it harmonious and how to encourage peace and harmony in our environments. So it's a nice way to cut down on our work, too. I have a friend who wasn't feeling very well last night, and like you, Kate, he came over, his guest, he came over and spent, you know, until late this morning here and left feeling better. And I did very, very little to encourage that. It was just the space. The space itself can do all the work, you know, if we spend a little time on our space, whether it feels good or doesn't feel good, and how to work with that space. It makes us more, if we tune into our environment externally a little bit more and work with that, it also helps us tune into our internal environment. So the last thing is that there's some of you who are new to this class and this group, and some of you who have been here for a while. And for those of you who are new, if you haven't picked up on this, I think you will pretty quickly in the course, is that we're really looking at creating a context in our lives in which our biology responds favorably and in a harmonious way and in a way that encourages happiness in us. And in order to do this, a big theme is to slow down and throw what we don't need overboard so that we don't sink. So if we're really busy doing things we don't particularly enjoy doing, and living lives we don't particularly enjoy living, then it may very well be time to cut some things out that are keeping us from feeling that sweet freedom, right? Feeling that it's eluding many of us. So that's kind of a theme. And for those of you who've been here for a while, it really is so helpful to increase the trust. And if we've been on the fence, maybe it's time to jump off the fence a little bit more and to really trust, okay, I'm really going to trust. Things aren't going to fall apart. Or if they do, I don't care. I'm ready to slow down. I'm ready to throw this overboard that I don't need anymore. So anyway, just random thoughts. We've got a couple people with their hands raised. Kate, so I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah. Yeah, and I just want to comment on one thing that that comes up. And it comes up more in integral, like the integral philosophy from from Integral Institute, Ken Wilber, spiral dynamics, all that. For anyone who's into that, it's like once you know the territory, you can throw away the map, right? And so I sense for a lot of us too, it's like we're kind of there. Like we really get what foods work for our body, so we don't need to obsess on it. We really get what practices really work for our body, so we don't need to obsess on it. You know, we really get how to create harmony in our environment. And yes, we can keep up-leveling these. Like, we can keep refining these. But we don't want to get obsessed with that. Like, we don't want to confuse that these, like, these pointers are how we actually move into the next experience of interconnectivity, of bodily health, and harmony. But at the same rate, like, if we aren't really experiencing like harmony in our own diet or harmony in our own environment, if we don't have a healing space in our home, if we don't have a healing and nourishing environment in our kitchen, like we want to do that. we need certain levels of competencies in that. And that, I mean, one of the things that I before we bring people on, one of the things that I look forward to in how this Healthier Hormones community and e-course works is we twice a year offer a replay, basically like come into the community and we all get to listen to the e-course, you know, on our own schedule, but over a certain amount of time, over 6 weeks, we all get to kind of re-up our commitment to ourselves and to understanding our physiology, understanding how our physiology works from an Ayurvedic perspective, from a Chinese medicine perspective, from how, you know, and Dr. Claudia really unpacks that deep wisdom in a way that's accessible for us to tap into, to feel. And we get to up our personal practices so that we have even more connectivity. And to me, it's like, how do you wire yourself? Just like an electrician, right now we're having our condo remodeled in Mexico. And one of the things we told the carpenter is like, please rewire this for more connectivity. Like, we want to run more juice. And that's to me what we do in this community and with these practices and with part of the practices of the cognitive practices of understanding our physiologies. We rewire ourselves to be able to be more in this life and to do more and to have greater, to me, really a greater positive impact.
Kate, has that happened for you since the 2 years we've been running this program? Has it happened for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, it really has. I mean, and it's funny. I guess the way that it shows up for me is I'm really having a bigger impact. Like my whole, the whole Yoga Healer platform is definitely growth oriented. And I talk to other entrepreneurs, other women entrepreneurs, in different industries, but also in the online market. I hang out a lot with women entrepreneurs now, who are definitely impact oriented, but they don't know how to take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. And that differential of wow, I'm not overworked. I'm not exhausted. I'm not ungrounded. Like, I listen to when my body needs rest. I have a very simple life. And I think the community itself helps me. It's in a way, it anchors that, there's grounded in reality. And to me, It's not that I wasn't having that, because I'm an Ayurvedic practitioner. I know this stuff. But when you have a community that's living this stuff, and reporting back, and it's, to me, there's so much about creating conscious culture and hanging out in conscious culture, whether that's in Facebook groups, whether that's in online calls, whether that's face-to-face, to me, actually, the medium doesn't matter quite so much. It's great to have face-to-face, but like you and I, it's nuts, isn't it? We've never met in person.
Yep.
It's totally nuts, but I'm hey, sister, and we hang out on Skype, chat, and whatever. I mean, there's a lot of connection in our field, and yeah, it'll be awesome when we can give each other a hug. I look forward to that day, but it's not the end-all, be-all. So this part of being in conscious culture, what I'm finding, and what I'm finding for students in this group and students in other groups that I create, is that we define our own ethics, and if our ethic is, I listen to that my body needs more rest. I listen to that in this group, people are finding massive efficacy with having a more dedicated pranayama practice. You know, that there's something in there that starts to anchor, maybe I should do that. Maybe I should step that up. Or I want to really feel what everyone else is feeling that's happening in this larger space. And in that, there's a sense of I can really plug in and feel the support of a larger whole.
Good. I love hearing that. Let's hear from the people who are raising their hands here.
Yeah, great. So, Catherine, I am going to, trying to give you the mic. Hold on just a second. Catherine, we don't have your last name, but you do have the mic.
Oh, it's Berger, if you care.
Oh, Catherine Berger. Hey.
Yep. Hey. I did the first Healthy Hormones course, so I guess I've been on it from the get-go. And that first course really spoke to me, and a lot of the practices that were talked about on that I used myself and used with my students. And I, too, started out being very concerned about, I need to eat this way. I was so into the minutia of it, and have found as time has gone on that I don't have to have that hyper awareness, but it makes things so much easier. So now what I find is some of my friends are a little freaky about what they think I eat or don't eat. And I'm like, look, it's totally cool. I can take care of myself. But thank you for, being concerned. But I still get the comments of people are like, wow, you really look different. And it's not just about the yoga. It's not just about the eating. It's all the pieces all put together, and that clarity and awareness that comes from just letting things sit and being quiet has been a great gift that both Kate and Dr. Claudia have given to this community. And so it's really changed how I perceive so many things.
I love hearing that, Catherine, and I wonder if you can, I haven't been able to find the right words today in this call to describe kind of what you're getting at too, which is, all right, if it's not all these minutiae pieces, they're all important, but they're not the end. They're sort of the means to the end. And all of these things allow something better than the parts. And
the first
what
thing
is that
you
something?
Taught,
yeah.
The first thing you taught me that really resonated with me was you said that when you first started consulting that you had 100 different cures for one person. And then as time went on, you shifted to one cure for 100 people.
Right.
And that really did it for me. It's like, you know, you solve the low-hanging fruit first. Like you said, go to Whole Foods.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You just start there, and you just keep going deeper and deeper as the clarity comes.
So let's talk about that clarity just for a minute, because that's kind of what I'm getting at. Is, all right, what is all this leading to? You know, we all now if we have the courage to throw some stuff overboard, we have a little space, we have a little time. The space opens up. What's enjoyable about that space? What does that feel like? And I'm putting you on the spot here, but I'd love to hear in your words, what does that space feel like? Does it feel like, oh, great, I've got the food thing down? Or is it something different? Is it something, all of those things are little pieces that allow us to step up and see a view that we haven't seen before?
What the space has allowed for me is to allow my life to happen with whatever I'm doing. Whether I'm in asana practice, whether I'm riding my horses, whether I'm, right now I'm actually setting up for an event, and I'm not taken away from the task at hand as much as I used to be. So the space has allowed me more focus, and then, of course, back to that clarity again.
I love the way you put that. It allows my life to happen. I'm learning how to allow my life to happen. Now, when that happens, when you sit back, Catherine, and you allow your life to happen, what that's saying is that you're not driving it with your will and your decision-making capability. Something's happening, right? And
yeah,
is
my that,
is how it's happening, is how it's happening working out, or is it all falling apart in some miserable, horrible way?
Oh, I have never felt like it was falling apart. Things go wrong. I mean, that's life. Things still happen. I still suffer some things. But it's how my perception has changed in dealing with those things.
Yeah. All right. I really appreciate
it.
I really appreciate that. I think that allowing my life to happen is an important piece for us, because especially when we're pitta, especially when we're type A, especially when we're driven, we think that we have to make it all happen. And when we see that something, like my guru used to say, hava yahi sikalati hai, simrana karate chale chaloto manjila kud nilajati hai, which means even the wind teaches us this, that if we keep walking while doing the remembrance, the destination comes to us by itself. And that's another way of looking at this, allow my life to happen. If we have that space, if we repose in that space that's created by trust, that's created by a bit of a surrender, let's say, if we can repose in that, something happens. The Dharma comes to us by itself. We don't have to go out and pick our Dharma and choose what we're supposed to do with our life and decide what we're supposed to do with our life. Minute to minute, that comes to us if we just stay in remembrance. It's a state of emptiness, but like prana, when it's empty, it's full. There's a fullness to it. It's not this miserable void. There's a fullness to the space.
I just want to pipe in that. It's like the, to me, the practice that comes up is the sense of dialogue in second person. Like when we dialogue with the divine and we see that it's really co-creative, and bringing ourselves into the conversation in that way is what helps us start to, I can relax. I can have an easeful relationship with life. I can have a relationship with life that is tapped into the inherent support.
Grace in the space.
Yeah.
I love it. Catherine, thank you.
I just want to say, too, yeah, Catherine, it's so cool to hear that. I mean, just from me and knowing, you know, from when we started, it's just great. It just warms my heart.
Oh, well, you guys have really made a difference in my life, and I'm sure many others. I mean, Nadi Shodhana is a part of my life, as is the working through the blockages. So, I mean, thank you guys.
Thank you. Uh-huh. Thank you. It's really, really a pleasure. Really a pleasure, Catherine.
All right, I'm going to bring on Jenny Kramer next. Hey, Jenny.
Hi, Kate. Hi, Dr. Claudia.
Hi.
I still look forward to these calls after, like, I don't know how many I've been on. And I wrote to Dr. Claudia once in private and just said, I think of you guys as like this guardian angel sitting on my shoulders while I in those moments where I'm struggling to make a decision. And I'm just like, wonder what Dr. Claudia and Kate would say about this. Anyway, so it's just, you're always there. I wanted to speak to that word that Dr. Claudia is looking for. And I've actually been giving this a lot of thought myself. And for me, I feel like in all things, what I'm looking for is that balance of Spira and Sukha, effort and ease. And I was just in my head thinking about how, like when a new yoga practitioner comes to a new asana and there's all these alignment cues and the breath work and what direction is the prana flowing and which muscles do I engage? And the effort is so big, like just to stand in mountain pose or down dog. It's just like this total mind game in the very beginning. And then after a lot of years of effort, there's just this day when you exhale back in a downward dog, and it's this thoughtless process that's so graceful. And I think it feels different on the inside, it looks different on the outside. And what I'm finding is to use that teaching in every aspect of my life. And so with food, like in the beginning, I'm like, okay, what's going on with my body? What foods do I need to eat? Which ones do I need to avoid? And then at some point, there was a shift, and it became less about processing all this data and more about the awareness that Dr. Claudia is talking about, like the feeling of the experience. And I think that gets at to what that word up-leveling means a little bit. It's like maybe shifting from that place where life is just so much effort to this balance of effort and ease. And then if you flip in the other direction and it's too much ease, I think your biology comes back and barks at you, and you get sick, or you start to feel lethargic, or whatever. Those things get out of balance. So anyway, that's how I've been thinking about it. So I don't know if that word that you're looking for might be yoga, or it might be the other word that keeps popping up for me is integration. Like that's when I feel like I finally understand an asana, where I'm no longer thinking about the different things all my body should do in the prana. It's just this one integrated experience, just constantly evolving and changing with me. Anyway, that's just some thoughts right there.
Thank you. Thank you. I love that. And I love and I'm just, for anybody who isn't familiar with the words that Jenny is using, sthita and sukha, sthita means stable, and sukha literally means good space, but it means happiness. And sometimes people translate it as ease. And, you know, you can talk about this as the relationship between discipline and freedom as well. You know, disciplining our thoughts gives us freedom from misery in a certain sense. you know, disciplining ourselves to practice the violin, and eventually we can play a beautiful sonata. And by we, I don't mean me. I mean somebody else who has done that. But I think we get a little afraid of discipline and the word and the experience in the West that, oh, discipline, this is, you know, this is no fun and it's not passionate. But there's a freedom that comes from that discipline. If we discipline ourselves, for example, away from misery in our thoughts, oh, we have more room for sukha. I want to see if you can speak to that a little bit, Kate. I want to find that quote that you and I talked about that a friend of mine said about just cultivating the yes. So I'm going to turn this over to you while I find that because it's so beautiful. I'd love to share it. Internet. Maybe Kate is. Kate, are you there? Jenny, can you still hear me?
I can still hear you. I have one more thing I'd love to share regarding all that. If you want to look for
good,
that quote.
please do, and I'll look for that quote.
Okay. you know, I think the other thing that is so cool about this course is, and just about this community, and is like once you step into the space, this might sound scary, but once you step into the space, there's totally no turning back. Like there's this evolutionary impulse that just pulls you farther and farther. And I had the experience this winter of trying to step back actually a little bit. I was trying to experiment with this, like, oh, I've been a little obsessive about this food thing, you know? And it just was getting a little, so like you were describing, like a little bit obsessive, and I was like, I'm going to back off. And I backed too far off, actually. Like I started having sweet treats that I would never eat just to see what happened. And my body responded, I've had more colds this winter than I've ever had in my life. You can probably hear it in my voice. And I don't take it personally. I was like, okay, that experiment didn't work. You know, that's okay, more data, that's cool. All right, now the evolutionary impulse is pulling me forward again. And I just feel like your biology, once you up-level, your body is like, uh-oh, we're not going back the other direction. So if you're going to choose not to do the practices, I'm going to be really loud and clear that that's not okay anymore. And,
I love that. It's really true. Things that we think, oh, I really used to love that. I'm going to try that. We see and we feel what happens with that. We get a pretty immediate feedback. All right, here's the quote, and I think you'll like this, Jenny, but I think everybody will love this. This is a quote from a dear friend of mine who passed away in March, and he wrote this to his daughter who was undergoing a really, really horrific, debilitatingly painful nervous disorder for a little while. So he writes to her, and he was so careful with his words. I'm sure it took him an hour to formulate this short email that he wrote to her, but I just love it. His name was Bruce Lowther, and what an incredible example of so many things we've talked about he was in his life. So here's what he wrote. He says, "The main thing is to avoid worry, as that will certainly impede the process. Yeah, I know that is easier said than done. But the technique I have used is focus on a positive discipline. Rather than using up energy trying not to worry or engage in negative thoughts or actions, it is much better to keep saying yes to whatever you can think or do that is positive. We are all compelled to think and feel something, so we might as well direct and use the power of mind and cultivate our feelings towards the yes, which with practice leaves very little room for the no to occupy us." I just love that. We're all compelled to think and feel something, so we might as well direct and use the power of the mind and cultivate our feelings towards the yes. So,
I love it. Can you hear me again?
Yeah. Yep, can hear you now.
Okay.
There's a little some background noise, but that might be from Jenny's mic too. So.
Well, yeah, that might be me. I'm a crying baby.
Okay. Well, thanks, Jenny.
You're welcome.
to me, it really speaks to that. You know, there's all these different parts of the self. I mean, in yoga teaching, right? We have the five koshas. That we have this physical body. We have this pranic or energetic body. We have this mental, emotional body. This intuitive body, and this bliss body. And in many ways, it's a lot to take care of. I have this five body hygiene video some of you may watch, and it's like when we really look at how there's a lot of different growing edges that we all have. We also have this interrelational self. We're starting to see a lot more of evolutionary communities moving into this, what's happening in the space between us. Wow, we can sense that too. We can sense this when we come together as a group, when we come together as a collective, there's another entity that's formed that we can be sensitive and actually have a shared communal experience of. And in my senses is with all these, you know, growing edges, if we get exactly what your friend was telling his daughter, that there's an action bias, right? That we become attuned to taking action according to a discipline or a field or a growing edge that we want to master, or we want to at least see some progress in. And I just invite us to note right now, like, what is that for you? Because there's going to be, you know, there's usually going to be a couple growing edges that you've been noticing arising in your thought processes or in what you're attracted to. And then the sense of like, okay, now where am I going to get the support? And because it's not usually just information, there's like usually information plus. There's like information plus support plus accountability to really move forward in this, to really make some headway, to really invent myself at the next level of self that I am capable of. And I might not even know I'm capable of, but I have a sense that there's something more. And I just want to say one more thing about this. For the people who have been in this community, I want you to reflect on how you being in this course and part of this group has had an impact, you know, that's larger than you, whether it's on your children, your family, whether it's the women or the women and men in your yoga classes, or for many of you, you have, you know, there's a lot of practitioners of various modalities here in the healing realm, and how it's affected your clients, or how it's just affected the little small conversations that you have, you know, with people in your life, and to really see that there's something happening that's beyond ourselves.
I love that. I think one thing that can happen is sometimes we don't know what impact we're having on people. It's hard to see that. Sometimes it's easier to see how many people around us are suffering and how many people around us, you know, we can think of it as, oh, everybody's so crazy and everybody's committed to being crazy instead of sane. And it can be a little disheartening, and maybe we have the same conversations and we've got it and more, and we want to share that, and it's made our lives so much better, and we want to share that, and it seems like people have all kinds of excuses to not share that with us and not choose that, and to not worry about this too much, not get too disheartened. I used to get really disheartened by that. You know, people would say, well, you can do it because of your special circumstances, but I can't do it because of my special circumstances. And I used to, you know, argue with that a little bit, and at a certain point decided not to argue with that anymore. You know, maybe we need our excuses or our crutches as long as we need them, but not to get discouraged about having this conversation over and over and over and over. Because change does happen, we just don't always see it. We don't always see, sometimes we do, sometimes it's really clear. Sometimes we may not have any idea some of the effects that our actions are having. So not to get too disgruntled about that. You know, I think about all the things that my guru told me to do that I either do half-assedly or don't do at all or haven't gotten around to even trying. And I'm so glad that he never gave up on me. So
I love it.
You know, let's not give up on each other. This isn't a race, and there's no reason to be afraid. My husband and I found this some term going around Facebook called an apocaloptimist. Someone who believes that everything is going to hell in a handbasket, but feels like it's all going to be okay in the end anyway. We both love that. Like, and if you're a doctor, you can be a doc-apocaloptimist. Anyway, you know, you just, there's things might look like they're going in a really bad trajectory, but finding a way to be okay anyway, you know, being an apocaloptimist might not be the worst choice in the world. Mm. It's all okay. It's all okay.
So I see there's one other hand up, and I would love to just bring one more person on to talk, and then after I'll talk a little bit about, you know, for those who want to come into the community, how that works. So I don't know who you are because I don't have your name, but I can tell you your phone number is a 661. Oh, this is going to be interesting.
Don't say the whole phone number. Don't say the whole phone number online.
Okay, right. So yeah, if you press 1, just you're unmuted. Are you there?
Anybody out there?
Hello?
There you are.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah,
yes.
I can hear you. What's your name?
Kate, it's Mary from Australia.
Oh, Mary, hi, welcome.
I firstly want to say thank you very much for timing this call so it's not in the middle of night for us down here.
It's a pleasure, Mary.
And I just wanted to share, because I've also been following the course since the very beginning, and it's certainly, Claudia, in response to your last few comments, made a big difference about how I work with my clients. And one of the stories that I've loved, and I often refer to because of the disease of dizziness, is your story about lying on the couch for 6 months and learning how to not feel guilty when someone walked in the room.
Yeah.
And I told a client that story only yesterday, because of just to tap into what is it that drives it, and learning how to rest.
Yeah, it's such a fundamental need and a fundamental joy, and it's just so difficult to find our way to enjoying it.
Yes, and Kate, I've just sent you an email. About a poem by a man called Michael Looney. I don't know if you know of his work, but he's a cartoonist, and he's written a little book, which is a series of letters, and there are letters about life. And one of the letters, a question is asked: is what is it worth doing, and what is it worth having? And the answer he gives is, it's worth doing nothing and having a rest.
Having a rest?
Having a rest.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
And it's got a... So I sent you the copy of the poem, and you might want to post it or something later, but it's... I often read it to clients after they've finished the treatment. And it's got some, you know, very wise words in it about honouring our noble rest.
I love that, and you know, the whole, what Catherine said earlier, allowing my life to happen, and this grace in the space feeling. I think that's, you know, there's not a particular word I'm actually looking for this. It's just hearing you all share your experiences with it. I think it's difficult to describe that grace in the space, but that. There's almost a nobility about doing nothing and having the courage to do nothing when nothing is called for. It allows us, I think, not only to do nothing, but to do the right thing at the right time, without planning and without scheming, but with just when we have the courage to do nothing and to absorb into that space and not feel guilty about resting and not feel guilty about doing nothing and not feeling like that space needs to be filled with our own whatever, that when we align with that, the right action also comes. Along with the inaction, the right action comes. And there's an equal space in both the action and the inaction, it feels to me.
I agree, and that's been my experience in working with both of you and listening to your stories and your wisdom. I think the biggest impact for me has been over the giving myself permission to say no to things and to tap into that wisdom, to choose that little bit more wisely. And life has become slower and simpler, and I'm just absolutely loving that.
I love hearing from you, Mary, and I'm really glad we were able to do a time that pick a time that worked for Down Under, and God willing, we'll remember to do that in the future as well, and have one of each of our calls be at a time at least that you can be here live. So thanks for being here.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. Great to hear from you, Mary. So I want to just. I just want, especially for those who are new, to put this conversation in a bigger context. If some of you are like, I want to know more about healthier hormones, I'm just going to tell you a little bit about it. There's actually a lot of information on the website on yogahealer.com/healthier-hormones. There's plenty of information there about how it works. And what you may have been hearing through the conversation is that it's a lot about plugging into what your own biology needs and can help you thrive, and then also plugging into some of the bigger picture of where your growing edges are. And, you know, I know for, you know, a lot of people came into this community with real, you know, wanting to actually work on really specific health issues, whether it's a more useful transition with menopause, whether it's, you know, it's getting pregnant, whether it's recovering from postpartum, whether it's hard menstrual cycles, or lack of menstrual cycles, or thyroid issues. And that's part of, I mean, it's part of what really brings this community together, is looking at our own physiology and understanding our own physiology much more intimately. And for us that are, you know, coming into this conversation from the yogic path, which is probably almost everybody, I'm not even going to run a poll on that one, there's this way of understanding with the language of Ayurveda and the language of Chinese medicine. And that's what so much of this course is about, is making that language our own and making the experience of it our own. And so that with that, there's a sense of, now I know the language and now I understand these practices, because we do have specific practices around Ayurvedic daily rhythms and around pranayama and meditation that we use. And when we come into a community container where there's other people practicing, it helps us hit the cushion a little bit more regularly or for an appropriate amount of time, so that we can see if these subtle body practices, if they really shift any physical symptoms that might be arising, even if the symptom is, I don't have the kind of energy that I used to, or the symptom is, I don't really feel like I'm living my life as on purpose as I want to. And I know for a lot of people, I heard a little bit about, like, oh, I'm excited to hear this talk on, you know, on inner body power. And to me, what it's really all about is, like, once we're a little bit more plugged in and aligned, what happens through us is a lot more plugged in and aligned. And so we get that connection. So whether, you know, you're showing up for real physical issues, real, you know, hormone-based issues or women's life cycle issues, or whether you're just here because you're looking for a supportive community that gets that you're a growing person with growing edges. It's really what this community is designed on. And I just wanted to say a little bit about the nuts and bolts. It is basically an investment in a community. It's not just like an e-course. There's a 6-week e-course, and everyone goes through it, and then you're opting in to have access to, when we go through it again and again, the same course. And there's different levels of depth in our own understanding. I know now when I listen to, you know, the actual content audios that have these deep teachings in them, I'm hearing it in a new way. They're applying to my life in a new way. And then we always have a Q&A call at the beginning and at the end. So there's a chance to interact live. And we have a forum on Facebook. It's a private forum that no one except for people in Healthier Hormones plug into. It's a very loving, supportive community where you can, you know, you can ask a question, you can post a comment, you can connect with other people that are living and changing and growing on the same trajectory from the same really container. And that's about it. Again, I'll mention the page. It's yogahealer.com/healthier-hormones. And the way that it's structured is in a week from today, we're going to go into the 6-week course together, and then we'll have another live call just for people enrolled in the course, not open like this to the greater world. And we'd love for, you know, we'd love for you to share the word with anyone that you think would also be, you know, is kind of looking for something like this.
You know, a couple of things with this. One is that this is the first call, right? And this is open to anybody. It's not really question and answer, as you've seen, but it's just a conversation that we just kind of go where it goes. But the call at the end is really for questions about that come up for you about the course, whether you're going through it for the fifth time or the first time. So we also, both Kate and I, really make an effort to be on the Facebook page and address some questions as we're going along, too. So it's a way to connect with both of us. And I want to mention something else about that Facebook page. Like I said, I'm not a huge Facebook user, but it's a really beautiful forum. And in the 2 years that we've had this forum up, and the hundreds, if not, I don't know, maybe a couple thousand people who are taking this course, anybody who has ever commented or made a question or commented or answered somebody else's question on there, I've never once seen anything sharp or negative, you know, never. It's so supportive and sweet, and I want to thank everybody for that. It's just one of the things that happens is people have questions and they put it out there, and Kate or I make comment, but also many of you have an incredible amount of wisdom that you share with each other in different life stages and experiences, and it's been really helpful. And if we have a little time, Kate, there are a couple questions recently that were posted on that on the site that I would love to just have a little time to address, because it's a little easier to address them in person than writing sometimes.
Yes, great.
All right. So maybe I'll pick one here. And actually, I was thinking, Kate, that you might, being a mother yourself, you might be able to speak to this very sweetly and they have a few things to say, as usual, but I think it might be really good for you to address this. So Joanne says, "Hi, I'm wondering if the community here has wisdom and support to share with me. I'm a new mom with a 10-month-old daughter. I'm hitting the wall with regards to fatigue, as Bubs is back to waking through the night. I usually end up feeding her, as I'm too tired to commit to settling, and the feeding works quickly. Chicken and egg, I realize. Any tips to try before I gather energy for a resettling stint to repattern? Claudia Welch, I recall you saying sometime about ghee before bed for babies to fill them up. My inner ding says it's become a pattern where she likes the emotional bond, but enjoys a huge feed to bomb out with too. Happy to post more info if need be. I recognize that there are other factors at play contributing to my fatigue, which I'm trying to address, but all that would be greatly helped by some good night's sleep. Thanks." So couple of things just in general for new people. If you're considering this kind of general question, we can answer in a general way. We don't really use it for answering people's personal health problems and giving them personal information, so we kind of back away and try to address these questions in a way that will help the most people and not really specific. We can't give specific health advice, right? But with this, in terms of general information about this, there is this wonderful tip about ghee that I heard from Carol and Kim, who own and run Lakshmi Gardens, which is a wonderful place for Panchakarma in the United States. There's a few nice places, and that's one of them. And they have a beautiful baby, probably a Vata baby, but this baby is so calm and wonderful. And so they told me about this tip. It's just beautiful, of giving when the child is waking up continuously throughout the night wanting to feed in little bits and little drabs, there's a couple of things about this that are really useful to keep in mind. And I'll give you this tip first and then back up and talk about a couple of other things. But the tip is to give the child a teaspoon of melted ghee just before they go to bed at night. If they're getting up to feed more, you know, every 2 hours, this kind of thing, to give them that little bit of ghee kind of settles them for the night much better. But then a couple other things in general about feeding with newborns is we want to think about newborns in a similar way that we think about grown-ups in Ayurveda in terms of Agni, in terms of the digestive power, in the same way as when an adult snacks all day long, their digestive power never has a chance to really build up and get a good appetite going. The same thing with feedings with new moms, with nursing moms, is if there's a constant feeding, it will create a pattern, certainly, but it'll also keep Agni a little low. And then there's more chance for the child to develop some digestive disorders. So really helpful to really empty the breast fully with the baby. And if the baby falls asleep doing that, to kind of wake the baby up and really encourage the baby to finish emptying the breasts and then to put it down and really to work with that so that there's a longer time between feedings and the Agni can come up a little bit. So that's one thing. Another thing is drinking fennel tea as if it's going out of style. A cup a day is not going to do it, right, if there's digestive disorders for the baby. These are very, very simple little tips, and pretty much anybody can do them. And they may not solve all the problems, right, but there's something to start with if there's some digestive colicky stuff to drink, you know, up to a gallon of fennel tea a day. Just when you drink, make it be fennel tea and not water, that kind of thing. But there's more to this question, of course, than that, especially around the emotional bonding aspect. And I wondered, if Kate, if you'd like to speak to that. But the last thing I do want to say here is, oh, my word, it gets better. You know, it gets better when you're in a tough time, and sleep deprivation is something that often happens, even in the best of situations. And it gets better, and send you lots of love, Jillian. All right, Kate, you have something to add to that?
Yeah, no, and I just so hope Joanne just like listen, like replay that like 10 times, that little part from Kalani, just keep like backing up 30 seconds, because we need to hear that, and we need our new moms to just be held in that space of like this is it's like it's an intense field in the beginning. A few things. And I didn't catch it. How old is the baby?
10 months.
Oh, 10 months. Okay, so we're 10 months. So it's not like we're in the first trimester postpartum, or even in the second trimester postpartum. So I mean, my sense is this: is if you're co-sleeping, which I imagine you are, maybe not, but if you're co-sleeping, your pheromones are going to be like kind of right there and stimulating to the baby. It's like, it's just like right there. So I would even say, like, I'm all for co-sleeping, all sorts of things, whatever works for you, but it's not working right now for you, or you feel like this is a growing edge. So I'd say, well, have your husband sleep with the baby and you go sack out somewhere else and see if you can start to extend that time. So then you're not just within arm's reach. And that can help. That can start to extend that period of time. And doing the ghee, absolutely, yes. And also doing, you know, before bed, starting that evening routine early enough that maybe the two of you can take a bath together and do oil massage together. So there's that sense of connectivity and nourishment that's beyond oral satisfaction. And to me, it's huge. It really teaches that like, oh, touch is so huge, and that oil, like receiving oil in from the skin and really consciously relaxing the nervous system before sleep. So then it's like the baby will be less trigger happy over the course of the night. That's about all I want to say.
All right. Well, there's other questions, but I kind of feel like we've plowed through a lot pretty fast in this call, so I don't want to pack more in. I'd rather have a little bit of space here. And so I just kind of want to stand back again and just take a little time. I mean, just taking a little time and focusing on something besides food as being the answer to all our problems. Recognizing that you don't have to be an incredible asana practitioner in order to have a good life, even a healthy life. That, you know, the Sanskrit definition of health is to be situated in yourself. Sanskrit definition of health does not say you have to do X number of asanas a day. It just doesn't. You have to be situated in yourself. And the texts I love most about breath say that you have to get this stuff for yourself. You can't just go and take something that somebody is teaching and do that forever and that's the right technique. You have to check for yourself. Within ourselves, we have to check, is this working? Is it making us feel better or is it making us feel worse? If it's making us feel better, great. Good on us. If it's not, let it go. Kind of letting it go. And that applies to thoughts. It applies to food. It applies to environment. And just feeling a little comfort. Feeling a little comfort in the middle of our lives, whether they're busy or whether they have space, and giving more space, situating in the space in ourselves. And not in our brain, not in our emotions, but in the space in ourselves, giving that space a little airtime, practicing that space, practicing being in that space every day so that we have something to go back to throughout the day. So every morning, so we have something to go back to throughout the day. And as somebody said today, maybe it was Catherine, maybe it was Mary, I'm not sure who it was, I don't remember, but how we would never go back. You know, once we start getting this space, once we get comfortable with resting and not feeling guilty about it, not feeling like we've got to look on task or be on task at all times for all the hidden cameras around us. But once we get that, we wouldn't ever go back. It just looks like insanity to go back. So, yeah, taking the space. I don't think I have anything else to say except I'm glad to be here with you. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for being here. And Kate, thank you for being here again and again. And it's such a pleasure again and again to be here myself.
Me too. Thank you all so much. We're going to go ahead and take a deep breath together and feel the presence of the space. And I'll go ahead and unmute the lines, and we can say goodbye till next time. Bye.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.